Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And this is a week of Independence Day, right? This is the 4th of July holiday. This is the week that for 200 and I want to say 47, but my math, I didn't do the math to prepare for that. That we're celebrating the founding of this nation as a nation that was declaring freedom for all the people who lived here. So
I can do that
Independence
math.
Day.
I can
what
actually
is it?
Do that math. You're right, because I was a bicentennial baby. So I was born in 76 and I'm 47. So 47 years.
Hey, look at that.
Math on the spot.
Well, I actually just saw someone's Facebook post where they were like, happy 247th birthday, America. So that helped like stick it in my brain. But yeah, I should remember that about you and your age. So that helps. Anyway, I don't necessarily want to sit here and talk about America because, first of all, we are not an American podcast. I know we've had listeners from all over the world, but I do want to talk about the concept of freedom a little bit because I think that that is the principle that so many people are celebrating this week. So many people celebrated on Juneteenth as well when the final remnants of the slaves in Texas were told about the emancipation and that that they had been free. And so I think freedom is a huge, important concept to all of us, especially we know today there are so many people enslaved around the world that we're still not a completely free culture in any country. So let's talk about freedom and what it meant for Jesus to come bring freedom to us all.
Right. I mean, he said it was for freedom that he came, right? To set the captives free. I love the passage in Isaiah that Jesus is the picture of, that he came to proclaim the good news and to do all of these beautiful things. And Jesus just walked it out in such a embodied picture for us to see. Like, the Lord could have done any number of ways that he could have brought salvation to us, but he brought someone from a lowly class that walked among sinners, that ate and drank with them. And it's so amazing to me. You and I over the last year have read through the Gospels a couple of times in different translations. And it's so amazing to me that every time Jesus is upsetting someone, it's the religious leaders.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with him, and it infuriates them just over and over again. And then it continues in the book of Acts with the disciples. It's not initially the Romans that have the problem. It's all of the religious leaders. They just get so infuriated that they would dare to think that a person, they couldn't see that he was God, but that a person could walk this out, because they'd been trying their best for thousands of years to live to the letter of the law. And they're like, if we can't do it, certainly you cannot.
Well, and he like intentionally went and broke some of the letters of the law that they had added on top of what scripture told them to adhere to. And so in their eyes, he looked like a sinner. He looked like he was breaking Sabbath, or like he was, mingling with the lessers then and all of those things. And so they were like, this sinner cannot be the person who's showing us the way to salvation. But also they were mad because they thought a Messiah was going to come and take control of the government, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bring them like a societal freedom that the Hebrew people had not felt in the Roman. I don't know much about the politics of that day, to be quite honest, but they wanted a Messiah to come and topple a Roman government and to give them more power in the country and in the culture. And Jesus didn't come to do that. He didn't come to overthrow Caesar or raise them up to national power. He came to show them how to walk in freedom in their own bodies, souls, and minds.
And did these crazy things like heal people and feed people and raise people from the dead. Crazy rabble rouser.
This reminds me of a sermon we heard one time, since we're talking about the letters of the law. This might be completely spinning off, but we heard a speaker one time talk about how we can have a little bit of compassion for the religious leaders of that time. We look back and go, oh, those Pharisees. But really what they were trying to do was adhere so strictly to what they believed were commands from God, so as not to fall out of favor with God.
Yeah.
And so when God said, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, what they said was, How can we best ensure that we never break this commandment? So let's set up all of these guidelines to make sure that we're nowhere near the cliff edge so that we're not falling into sin here so that we can honor God. And over just the thousands of years from the time of the Levitical commandments and the Ten Commandments and all of those, they began writing their own rules and laws so as to make sure they weren't falling into anything. And it just became this, they were bound by their own rules of their own making at that point, not just the ones that had been given to them as a new nation and new people. But it was the heart to be safe.
I think we can have compassion on that. I was just going to say it's the same reason why we people will be like, did you know that this city has this crazy statute on the books that's like you can't hang a blue flag from the doorpost of a thing on Main Street, or I don't know, like something random. And it's like, why? But there's a good reason for it, because someone did that and it upset people, but they couldn't, prosecute them or whatever. So it is the same. Like, we're always trying to ensure, well, our safety, right? Like, they were like, if breaking this means death, then what do I need to do to ensure safety? And like you said, as far from it as I can get. It's just that he kept coming over and over again to say to them, you're not seeing what's right in front of you. You're blind because of all of your laws. You're blind to the fact that I'm standing right in front of you. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the light. I'm the life that you're looking for as you're trying so hard to adhere to these statutes. And part of that is like this measurement of holiness that they were trying to attain. It's like holiness was marked really high on this ladder, that no one could get to within their own brokenness. And they understood the sin nature kept them from achieving that. But they looked at it as though it were this thing to climb to,
Yeah, it was external factors. If they could hit all of these external standards, then they'd keep climbing higher and higher on this quest for this holiness.
You had found out the meaning of that word in the Hebrew.
Yeah, I looked up what holy was in Hebrew, and it's I think it's pronounced Kodesh, and it means sacredness, it means set apartness, all the things that we've heard before. But what I thought was really interesting is that it specifically says that it is not an abstract principle. Like it's an embodied concept. So if they're throwing out all of these external standards to try to hit to climb this ladder towards this unattainable goal of holiness, and they're missing the brokenness inside of them that actually needs the holiness brought into it to reintegrate, they're never going to achieve that standard, and they're just going to be throwing people off the ladder on their quest to climb up.
And I think about that in light of freedom. Like, if the freedom is once I attain it, then I will experience that. But it wasn't the way to get there, because it never was an external thing, right? Then they've just taken on another form of a burden of oppression. So sin is one yoke of oppression that they knew and they didn't want, but they traded it for a different kind of yoke of oppression. And all of that is the antithesis of what actually is freedom.
And not just took it on themselves, but then they started placing that yoke on other people as well. Well, if I've climbed up four rungs of this holiness ladder, then why aren't you? Here are the steps to take. And they begin to put that on other people. Like, I have never broken the Sabbath, but that's because I don't lift anything heavier than an egg. So you cannot lift anything heavier than an egg. Well, we know that Jesus came in and healed people, and that was considered work, and he broke all of the man-made rules surrounding Sabbath. And so he was like, I'm not putting on the yoke of oppression of those man-made rules that you're putting on other people, because you're not seeing the bigger picture. You're not seeing what freedom is here instead of your little standard climb to get there.
It's so powerful. Wow, when you think about it.
How often do we do that?
We do it in so many ways about so many things, right? I mean, I grew up in the era of we only listen to Christian music. And if the Christian artist started to cross over, you had to be very careful because they were maybe getting, tainted by the sin of the world. I will be honest, my parents came further toward allowing more secular music by the time I got older, but definitely when I was younger and my older siblings were teenagers, it was like only these Christian artists. Lots of ways that we did that with, I mean, some more than even my religious background, but like How long is your skirt? How tight is your top? How, are you wearing your hair? Or do you have any piercings or tattoos? Like, we just go into so many things, right? And we look like we're not doing, we're not, oh, well, you can eat whatever you want. Oh, not really, though. Like, there's all these other rules we've placed on us. It's crazy.
That's good. Yeah, because that was addressed in the New Testament when they were like, no, God has called everything holy now, so you can eat anything. I mean, Paul even says everything is permissible for me. I mean, he goes on to caveat that, like, not everything is beneficial. And I think
Right.
we could talk about what that means. But if everything is permissible, I mean, that's a really big statement that the Jewish leaders of the time would have been like, whoa, slippery slope. Like, if you listen to that Boys to Men CD, you might fall a rung off that ladder. Because I totally broke my Boys to Men CD 1 year after camp. I came home and I was like, I don't need that secular music. I bought another one a couple years later. But that slippery slope, like, what is one thing that's going to cause you to fall a rung down that ladder? Because if it's always this external goal that we're striving to attain, then we have to put mechanisms in place that, or we're going to fall.
Yeah. Wow. So this might be shaking things up a little bit, but I heard in one of Richard Rohr's books recently, he talks about the Trinity of the Godhead is not two for a reason. It's three because you can't go to one side or the other in a Trinity. You have to kind of get into relationally the flow of that personhood. And so, like you're saying, this is an embodied concept of holiness. God is other than us, but we're invited into a relationship of that otherness. And it's not about the rules of black and white, yes or no, good or bad. It's like we're invited into a relational flow that's not one side or the other side. But because of just the way we're wired, as soon as we bring it, like any experience, like you said, going to camp, you probably had an experience of really being like touched by God. You probably really had an embodied experience. And then you come away from that, like, how do I hold on to this? Well, what's going to take me away from that? And then it becomes this very black and white thing. And I'm guessing that the stories that were passed down in the Jewish culture were about these experiential moments, right? Like Moses was face to face with God, or the burning bush talking to him, or the reality of seeing crossing the Red Sea, like what that felt like in their bones to have experienced this relational component with a, or not this relational moment with a holy God. It was beautiful and it was breathtaking. And they think, how can we pass that on so that our children and our children's children continue that? But without also having an experiential thing in a moment, they just passed on the rules to try to like frame it again. Like, let's see, what were we doing and how can we relive that? And how can, and I think we do that too. We just do it in our culture. It's the church camp and it's the revivals and it's those things that, again, not bad things, but it's when we walk away and we think, how can I recreate this? I don't have any other words.
I had some, but that was so good. I don't know. I think it's important to look at what the New Testament is saying. I think the Old Testament was kind of an external bar, right? That's what those commands came to do. And that's why there's a whole lot of them that we don't follow anymore. Like, we can eat shellfish and we can wear mixed fabrics and we can all the stuff that they literally could not do because Jesus came and he fulfilled everything in there. And so those don't apply to us anymore, right? So we don't have to live under the oppression of those rules, but we, like you said, we keep imposing them on ourselves and others, trying to get back to an experiential relationship with God. But then what do we do when the rules become the thing keeping us on the ladder? Maybe it's not about staying on the ladder anymore. Maybe it's about getting rid of the ladder.
Oh, what did you say those Hebrew letters that make up the word for holiness? Each of them you said had a meaning.
Yeah, this was interesting. I don't know what the letters, how to pronounce them, but every letter of that word has a meaning. So the first letter shows sacrifice as a preparation. The next letter speaks of a doorway or a gateway. And the last letter is about the power, joy, and peace of God. So when the command says, you shall be holy, instead of just being like, so you should be apart or you should go try to attain this unattainable perfection, Maybe it means you should be holy, means this may involve a sacrifice to prepare you to pass through the gateway leading into this power, joy, and peace of God.
And Jesus became that for us. That's why this ladder that we were trying to get to, this thing that was an external measuring mark, he was like, be in me, be planted in me. I am the gateway. I am the one. I'm the path that leads to freedom and joy and life, right? And he goes on to say, abide in me. When you abide in me, that's a relational connection. That's where you'll find the fruit of all of these things that are the fruit of what we would say holiness, the fruit of the Holy Spirit. That's where you'll find it, is abiding relationally with me, even as I do with the Father. So he says, I go to the Father, and the Father and I are one. And if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. It's this relational thing. He doesn't come, the Father told me to tell you this because if you do this, he's saying, no, like I'm a mirror image of the Father. So be in relationship with me, and I'm the path. What was that second letter? It was like the open doorway. That's exactly who he is, right?
I have so many thoughts, but I feel like they're going to spin in different directions. So if you have this leading somewhere.
No, I just think it's another example of how Jesus embodied what it looked like to take a step off the ladder climbing and walk through a doorway into a relational invitation, to be in the Father and to be in Jesus. It brings the fruits of the Holy Spirit into our lives then.
Not to wrap this back around a Father Richard Rohr, but I was reading through one of a devotional based on one of his books, and he talked about how a lot of us, and for a lot of us, I would say 99.9% of us, think that relationship with God, it should be transactional. And we wouldn't say it necessarily, but we live our life that we believe that really. Like, if we do this, and this, and stay away from this, and this, and we're going to be blessed, and we're not going to endure this hardship, or we're not going to name it. And maybe that's more of a first world kind of viewpoint of God, I think. But what that means is that we think if we do the right things, we're going to keep climbing that ladder to get closer to God and get closer to blessing and get closer to whatever it is. But our relationship with God shouldn't be transactional. It should be transformational. And that's where I think we have to take that really scary leap off the ladder and rest, like you said, rest and abide in Jesus, because that's where it becomes a transformational from the inside out rather than externally grabbing something from the outside in.
That's so good. I was just looking up lyrics of a song and now I can't remember what it was called. The last time I actually responded to like an altar call, which doesn't happen very much, in churches these days compared to as it was when I was growing up, but it was about unforgiveness. And I just recognized that who I was upset about in my life, I was actually upset with God, because I was saying, and the song, as I'm like praying this in my heart, was talking about the all my religion. I can't remember.
Yeah,
You know what I'm
I know what
talking
you're saying.
about? Oh, I can't remember what the song was. But it was basically like, I lay it all down, all my religion that I've made up, basically. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, God, I'm mad at you because I made a religion in my heart and mind that said, if I am the good girl, and if I do this, and this in the house of the Lord, and I do this for you, that the blessing should look like this. So I just made the whole contract up in my head about how this is
Yeah.
supposed to be lived out. It started with burning the CDs of the secular artists, right? And all the way through, like all my younger years and formative years and young adult years. And yeah, my unforgiveness isn't, I think it's toward a person until I recognize, oh, it's you, God. You're the one I'm mad at because you didn't uphold your end of the bargain. Just that revelation of that, I was like, oh, I'm such a religious Pharisee. Like, I created this whole system in my head that I thought I was climbing high enough up to get to the fruit of what I wanted to see of the goodness of the Lord. And I just felt like in that moment, he was just inviting me in to lay that stuff down, because it's a heavy yoke I don't really want to carry. And when I see it for what it is, it's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that, Lord.
Well, first of all, the song is called Make Room.
Oh, yeah. I will make room for you to do whatever you want to.
Yeah,
That's
your way is
the quote.
better. Shake up the ground of all my tradition, break down the walls of all my religion. Your way is better.
Yeah.
I think the concept of the good fruit you were trying to reach, that's what we want. I mean, that really is our heart when we're climbing this ladder. It's not all self-protection and personal security, although I do think that that's always going to play a role in our when in us when we're still living out of brokenness and fear. But we want to see the good fruit that comes from what we deem is the right back and forth transaction. But what happens is the good fruit, or the fruit itself spilling out of lives that are so worried about clinging to that ladder and reaching the top, it's not always the good fruit we're looking for. It's fruit of oppression and fear and bondage and keeping others at arm length, or gripping something so tightly in our hands because we're afraid to fall. That's not good fruit. That's not the fruit that Jesus was showing us, that if we remain in him and be part of that vine, then good fruit will flow out of our lives.
Yeah. Oh, and then he summarizes it all though for us. He says, if you want to keep the commandments, do these two things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength, and love your neighbor. Yeah, as yourself. Like, but we've talked about that before on the podcast. Like, how do we understand how to love like that when we've not first experienced that kind of love? And
Yeah.
the invitation that Jesus keeps making is to follow him into a way of knowing the Father, into a way of knowing what the holiness of God is really about. And that is a scary proposition. It just is. I think it is. I think it's easier to stay focused on the rung that
The
I'm going
list of
after.
rules.
Yeah, it's easier. It's like, well, at least I know what to do. There's something in front of me to do and to focus on. People, as much as our heart's desire is to be seen and known, it's also our biggest fear. Because all the way back to Adam, like when you understand that your nakedness is like synonymous with your shame, you don't want to be looked on. The idea of being looked upon is frightening. The idea of really being seen and not being seen worthy is so frightening. And I think that Jesus just kept addressing that fear by looking us head on. I know I've said this before, but I love the scene on The Chosen, where Jesus just looks at Mary Magdalene and she just gets lost in his gaze, and everything melts away. Like all the chains just fall off. You just see something shift in her, because she would have been a woman not worthy of someone's gaze. You know, I'm sure she tried very hard to live unseen, but Jesus sees her and he calls her name, and something shifts. And it's a relational invitation. It just is. He doesn't say, Mary, if you would just go do this, this, and this, and present yourself to the priest and be made clean, then maybe you can be part of what I'm doing. He
Yeah.
calls her by name, looks on her. Ah, I love it.
That what you just said though about the whole law can be summed up in love Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself, which we know there are three components: love God, love yourself, love others, right? I think that is what ties us back to what Paul says then about everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. Like, we are free agents now. We are free from sin. We are free from the effects of death because of what Jesus has done for us. So everything is permissible. But where it becomes not beneficial is when it breaks relationship with God, where it breaks relationship internally, like, and we are disintegrated or fragmented because of the choices that we make, or when it harms others in such a way. And so I think that if that can be the benchmark, then, and we're looking at it going, is this harming someone else? Is this breaking me apart inside? Then those are the things that we stay away from. We have the freedom now to find this wholeness within ourselves, and find this wholeness with other people, and find this wholeness with the relationship we have with Jesus, because we're free to do that now in a way that we couldn't when we were so broken and so disintegrated.
And all that always comes back to that word wholeness. WHOLLY is different than HOLY. And I'm only saying that because they sound the same when I say them. Whole
Right.
versus holy. And I won't say the Hebrew because I'll probably botch it up, but it comes back to this integrated state of, and which again is that shalom word that we've talked about, like nothing missing, everything complete, having the internal integrity to bear weight. So we're not called to put on yokes of weight, we're called to bear weight for one another, which is very different than taking on a weight that was not prescribed. But when we are fully integrated, we have an internal wholeness that then becomes something other than the disintegrated state of the world around
Yeah.
us. And that is a holy thing. That's beautiful.
So good. Okay, so happy freedom celebration to everyone. And by that, we mean get off the ladders of the rules of your own making and find yourself abiding in the arms of Jesus.
Amen.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.